Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Awesome. Hey, well, why don't we get started? Looked up on the mobile app, you would know that my name is Daniel Lim. If you looked up on the program, I'm not Todd Adkins, right? So that's the difference there. Todd Adkins and I work together, just to give you guys a little bit of a background. We work together in a department called Lifeway Leadership, so we both work at Lifeway. Part of Lifeway Leadership is the ministry that I lead called newchurches.com. Ed Stetzer and I do that together. And that's all our resourcing around church planting, multiplication, and multi-site. Ministry Grid is another one of the brands or ministries that we have under Lifeway Leadership. So is our Pipeline Conference. So as Todd and I were talking through what was going to happen, you know, hey, what would it look like to do? Because the first three seminars I did was all on church multiplication, our research on the state of church planting, practices of churches that multiply. And then these latter two, we were like, well, let's have them focused on leadership. So yesterday afternoon, I did one on leadership, developing your leadership pipeline, and this one is going to be a fun one on constructs to get stuff done. So his back is out, which is why I'm here, and he's still at home in Nashville. So that's why you don't see a white guy up here named Todd Adkins. So my background is I grew up in Vancouver, born and raised there, and I've pastored in Ottawa, Montreal, Korea, and Edmonton. And I moved to Nashville a couple of years ago to start this up, just the resource to initiative to resource planters, multi-site pastors, and churches towards multiplication. Awesome. And I have three kids. I have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 2-year-old, and I've been married for 10 years. Right. So just a little bit of background before we get started. Awesome. Let's. How about I pray and we'll get started. Thank you, Lord, that this morning, as the conference comes to a close, that we can, as our minds are kind of gearing into ministry back home and getting into the normal swing of things, that we can begin moving and shifting towards implementation. God, I pray that through some of the constructs that we're going to learn today, that this would just be practical, helpful, useful, that we would be able to implement this in our churches this week, Lord, this next month, so that we just pray that you would be glorified and honored and that you would guide our time together. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. Awesome. So, I love constructs. I love systems and frameworks to get stuff done. And Lorenzo and I work together in Montreal, and we've been spending a lot of friends and for, I don't know, 11, 12 years and just been hanging out a lot. And even yesterday night, I was kind of sharing some of my systems around social media and a lot of things like that. So what I love to do is I love to kind of figure out the best way to do something, how to systematize it, and then just let it run so that I can move on to the next thing. And so I'm always looking for efficient and effective ways to get stuff done. And I mean, you know, systems, you know, the acronym oftentimes people say it stands for saves you serious time, energy, and money, right? Systems saves you serious time, energy, and money. So in this session, I'm going to be introducing to you four different constructs or systems, one at a time. And after I introduce each of them, we can stop, have a time to discuss, work through, even if you have questions. As I'm doing my presentation, feel free to stop me as well. But I really want to help you in these constructs to first help you advance your strategic initiatives and to better develop your people. Right? Those are kind of, that's kind of the boundaries of these constructs, right? It's to move your plan, your strategies and your plans towards implementation, and then to better develop your people. It's all about bringing clarity to where your church needs to go and how your team fits in, right? So the first construct I want to provide for you is a framework for meetings. Okay, so let's do a little bit of brainstorm here. What are your guys' opinions on meetings? Pardon me? Yeah. What else? Pardon me? Okay. Yeah, you're right. Sometimes it goes meeting to meeting to meeting, and yeah.
I like to know when it's going to end and how much time we spend talking about stuff.
Yes,
Totally, totally. What else? How about from this side of the room?
I love a good meeting where a lot of people are offering their ideas and synergizing. Mm.
Yeah, that's kind of that's when meetings feel productive, right? Yeah.
This is maybe more of an appointment, but I want to know what we're going to talk about before we go.
Yeah.
If someone says, "Hey, I want to meet with you next week."
Yeah. Oh, for sure. The real reason.
Yeah, the real reason.
I just want to meet for coffee. I just
want to
meet.
What do you want me to say?
Yeah. Totally. So when are meetings successful and productive? So we had the first one, when ideas are being synergized. When else are meetings successful and productive? Yeah, or just your perception of success. When do meetings feel successful? Like at the end of it, you're like, yeah, that was a good meeting.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
I used to talk in the mornings one time a month.
Yeah, I'd say I like the morning meetings. I don't like the 1 or 2 p.m. meetings. So when do meetings when do they seem to drag on and feel useless? What happens? You know, if you can kind of reverse engineer, it's like, man, that just dragged on, seemed useless. What happened that you felt that way?
It happened again.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite or my, you know, worst is when you do make a decision and then afterwards there's the hallway conversations and it's all contradicting what you just said. Right? And you're like, what the heck? Like, dude, why didn't you just say something in the meeting? Right? Yeah. Well, there are different types of leadership styles. So before we get to different types of meetings, there's actually different styles of leadership that will affect why you meet the way you meet. Okay, so before we get to that, let's talk about the three different types of leadership teams. Okay, so the first one is a gymnastics team. Okay, so when you look at so the recent Olympics, all right, look at the U.S. gymnastics team. They just ripped it up, right? The girls' gymnastics team, right? So any of you guys watch that? Yeah, they're just like, it's crazy how good they are. Okay, so think about the team event. Right, the team event. When someone is doing the bars or when someone is doing the floor routine, what are the other team members and the coach and everyone else on the team doing? They're watching. Okay. Can they do anything? Not really. So who's the one in control during that floor routine? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The coach can say stuff, but it's not going to make any difference, right? So that's the first type of team. That's the team where you have a team of specialists around a table. Everyone's kind of, they have their thing that they do that they're good at. But what happens with the team in a negative sense is when one person is talking, other people push back. And they're like, well, what am I going to contribute to that? That person's the expert. I don't want them speaking into my area. This is my thing. So they push back, you know, they pull out their phone or they do something else or they're checking emails. But have you guys ever been a part of those sort of meetings where everyone's kind of a specialist, you pull back? Okay, so that's the first style of team. The next style of team is a surgical team. Okay, so think about someone having open heart surgery, right? And you have nurses, you have the anesthesiologist, you have the surgeon, you know, you just have the whole slew of the team there. Who is in control of that room? Yeah, the surgeon. Okay. What's interesting is the anesthesiologist kind of has veto power, right? He doesn't necessarily sit there like the gymnastics team does the anesthesiology and sit back, but he's always monitoring, right? However, it's really the surgeon, right? The surgeon is the one that's saying, give me the scalpel, do this, you're doing this, you're doing this. And sometimes if other people try to say, oh, but what about this doctor or what about that? You know, sometimes the surgeon can be pretty, kind of like a general, right? Right? So have you ever been a part of a meeting like that? Where the leader, the team leader, they have an agenda, they want to get stuff done. They kind of already know what the answer is. Right, and they're like, well, can you do this? Can you do that? And if anyone brings up anything else, it's like, okay, but what about this? Right? So the third style of team is a hockey team. Right? Being Canadian, I love hockey. So I don't know. Do we have any hockey fans here? Okay, maybe one, because you're Canadian as well. yeah. So, okay. I'm not going to go basketball, hockey, you know, whatever. So, hockey. Okay, when you, if you've ever seen a hockey game, you know, you got five players, you got the goalies, and, you know, the play's happening, the puck is being passed around. Who is in control on the ice?
Whoever has the puck.
Exactly. The coaches, they have a bit more control, right? They have a bit more control than the gymnastics coach does. Because during the play, if someone's skating back, they can pull a player off, put another player on, right? In a minute, a team can do two or three shifts. You know, you could do a 30-second shift. You could do a 15-second shift or a minute or two-minute shift. But the coach can pull people off and pull. And you can't, if you're a player, you can't do anything, right? You just have to listen and get pulled up, right? But when the puck is on the ice, whoever's controlling the puck is in control. So you can have a defenseman who's controlling the play of the ice. And then he passes it to his forward. And that person's controlling the play. And then you shoot it to the goalie, and the goalie's controlling, saying, am I going to hold it and call a face-off, or am I going to push it out and keep the play going? Right? So that's the third type of team, where you are co-owning the responsibility, where you are passing the puck, where you are sharing responsibility and ownership, all for the same goal of getting a goal, of getting the W, of winning. So have you ever been a part of a team like that, where you could actually, even though I'm not responsible for your area, I could actually share stuff, and you would be like, whoa, yeah, thank you. Well, what do you think about this? And I'm like, oh, yeah, what about this? And then we can kind of collaborate, right? And it's not this matter of, oh, it's my turf. You can't tell me what to do or what not to do. Right? So think about those three styles of teams. What leader are you, or what style of team do you like the best? Right? What style of team do you like the best? And what do you, when you lead your meetings, what do you naturally default to? In order to lead a team successfully and leverage the meeting instead of waste them, you need to understand what style of leader you are. You need to understand your default. Right? Whenever I present this, there are not many people that have ever said their favorite style of team is the surgical. Most people are like, oh yeah, of course it's the hockey team, right? Of course we're collaborative, of course. You know, it's like, that's just kind of the thing that you're supposed to say, right? But seriously, look at the way you lead. Look at your track record. Look at not the meeting that's going to come up, but the meetings that have happened in the past year. And what do you default to? That'll give you an idea of the style of leader you are, okay? So next, you need to know that there's not just one style of meeting. And this is one of the reasons meetings often feel so useless, right? They feel so useless because we think, okay, I need to call a meeting. So we often lead the way that we've been led, and we teach the way that we've been taught. So we think back to, okay, what was the best meeting I've been a part of? Or what were bad meetings I've been a part of? And you think back to your high school group project days, or you know, your meetings in other companies or churches that you've been a part of, and you're like, okay, well, what was good, what was bad? And you kind of just go off of that. And whether the meeting length is 10 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, a day, it's kind of, if you don't actively study different styles of meetings, you just kind of lead the way that you've been led, right? You teach the way that you've been taught, right? So before I offer you a few different frameworks for what you can do in meetings, let me walk you through the different types of meetings that Patrick Lencioni introduces in his book, Death by Meeting. Okay, so it's a fantastic book. One thing that I did was I actually added a type of meeting on top of his. So if you look at that book, Patrick Lencioni, Death by Meeting, you can find a lot of stuff online about that book, and without even having to read it, really. But one thing, as I read that and as I was implementing that into the teams that I lead and the churches in the churches that I've served in, I've actually added one here and kind of tweaked them, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of go through each of these meetings, each of these meeting styles, give you a little bit of contextualization of how you can implement them in a church setting, right? Because Lencioni is really talking about the business world, right? And so a lot of times it's different, right? So the first one that I wanted to go through is the idea of a daily check-in. Now, do any of you do a daily 5, to 10-minute stand-up check-in type of meeting where you're sharing your daily activities. The idea is like, hey, what are you going to do today? What are you going to do today? You're talking about, okay, what's kind of come out? What's kind of going out? But it's really focusing on, it's a 10-minute meeting. Stand up. You're just talking about what you're doing. You know, it's very, and you don't even cancel it when people aren't there. It's just really that 10 minutes. So do any of you do that? Okay. All right. So when you think about those types of meetings, it's hard to do if you don't have a physical church environment, right? If you have a church office and your church culture is a work in the office type of style, regardless of whether you had an event that ended at 10 p.m. the night before, right? If your church culture is work in the office, everyone gets there at 8 and leaves at 4 or whatnot, maybe you can go for coffee meetings in and out, then it's possible to do something like that. But even if you do have a church office, you know, the majority of churches aren't going to be as rigid as that, right? They're going to say, hey, we're going to have maybe a couple in-office days where everyone needs to be there, if you have a physical office. But if you don't, especially in the setting of a church plant, you know, what are you going to do? Right? What if it's just you and another person? Or what if you and three people and you don't have a church office? To do this, the last thing that you would want to do in a smaller, in a church size of 100 or 200, the worst thing that you could do is put the systems on it that you would need for a 1,000-person church. Right? You can't over-systematize. You need to provide the systems that are good and that fit and that still allow you to be as lean as possible according to the size of your church. So daily check-ins don't work for every church size or every church setting. Because think about it. You know, what if you had a ministry program that ended the night before at 10 p.m.? Would you want that staff member to come in the next morning at 8? Maybe once, but what if that person had ministry program that ended at 10 p.m. three nights that week? Would you want them to put in a whole days of work and then, you know, 8 to 4, go home for dinner, 7 to 10, come in, 8 to 4, go home for dinner, 7 to 10? I mean, that's not really a healthy rhythm, is it? Right? So my recommendation, if you were to do this, if you have a church building, even if you have a church building and even if you have kind of a culture of, hey, we're all going to be in, my recommendation is actually to do this digitally, okay, if you want to do it. I'm not saying that you have to do this. This is really a unique thing that I don't think every church has to do, right? But if it's something like, oh, yeah, I could see the helpfulness of that, I would recommend that you do it digitally. So not over email, because email threads are painful, but do it over a chatting or a messenger program like GroupMe or Slack or HipChat. Use the hashtag, like a lot of those chatting programs, you can filter by hashtag. So do a hashtag stand up and then just have everyone in the morning just write in two sentences what they're going to do that day. Really simple, really easy, regardless of where you're working, just so everyone is up to date on what you all are doing. Then if a further conversation needs to take place, you can do that in person over the phone, but it doesn't require the entire group. Right? It doesn't require the entire group. This is going to be more beneficial. You know, this. Think about this. This is actually going to be more beneficial for your team members than it is for you. And that's the purpose of it. You as the manager or the team leader, you are probably going to know what everyone's working on generally. But in order to foster a sense of collaboration and a sense of that hockey team of helping one another, right? This is so that everyone else knows what everyone else is working on. Because have you ever been a part of a team where you are kind of siloed and you don't really know what the other person is working on? And maybe they're in the office next to you and you hardly see them in? You know, we all know where our brains go. And we're like, are they even working? What are they even doing? And then they come to the team meeting and they're not prepared. They're like, well, obviously because they weren't in the office. Right? And they're like, what is this person getting paid for? You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's so easy for our brains to go there, for our minds to go there. So the idea of the daily check-in, make it really easy to do. Just text in your two sentences of what you're doing, but it's going to help that team trust be built and that team collaboration to happen. Another way, and this is actually what I would recommend. This is a great idea, the daily check-in, but this is probably what most churches are going to be able to do instead, is to do a weekly one-on-one instead. Okay. So this is where you, as the manager, as a team leader, are meeting weekly with each of your reports or each of your team members for 30 minutes. It's 30 minutes. It's not we're going to meet together, it's an hour, or no agenda, or that's not what it is. It is a weekly meeting, 30 minutes, it's regularly scheduled, it's rarely missed, and you taking notes, them taking notes, and doing follow-up is critical. And here's and this is just a little tip, okay? When you do this style of meeting, you need to ask the same question at the beginning of the meeting every single week. Okay, and I'll tell you why. Okay? What if your question can be, hey, how's it been going? Right? Or how is your week? Or maybe your question is, how's your family doing? Right? Something personal, right? And the reason you ask this exact same question every single week is because your team member is going to expect you to answer it. And a few weeks later, as trust, as the months go on and as trust is built, they are going to expect that and they're going to actually begin to open up about their life and what's really going on. I've seen this happen multiple times, right? And it happens because they know they're going to be asked that question. And every week, they can't just say, oh, I'm fine. It gets really awkward, right? It's like, okay, we've met for the last 10 weeks and it's always fine. Let me tell you what's going on in my life. It's not always fine for 10 weeks, right? So that's kind of the idea of that. And then, so this is a framework for that one-on-one, right? So you ask that first question, you know, let whatever comes out that comes out, and then you say, okay, it's yours. The meeting's yours. 10 minutes. What do you want to say? What do you need to update me on? What do you want to share with me? And then after the 10, 15 minutes is done, then it's your 10, 15 minutes. And you're like, hey, this is what I want to update you on. Because maybe you've been a part of a meeting that your team member wasn't a part of, that you need to communicate, right? So it's question, their meeting, your part of the conversation, and then what are our next steps, and you pray for them and you're done, right? So it's a really quick, easy 30 minutes, but what that allows you to do is really keep informed and get through, especially, I mean, you may have one or two reports, but I've had teams where I've had like over 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people that I've had to meet with on a weekly basis, and it kills you, right? It kills you, right? So to have it where it's 30 minutes, this is what it is every single week, you know, it really does help. Okay, now before we move on to the weekly tactical, any questions, troubleshooting, thoughts, ideas on those two? Yeah.
Besides just the conversation with them of, hey, we're going to do it this way.
Yeah.
Any advice for moving into that model?
Yeah. Do you have, like, do you use Google calendars? Do you use Outlook or
no. Any
shared calendaring?
No.
Okay. What email service provider do you use?
I use Hotmail.
You use Hotmail? Okay. So a lot of the calendaring, like Gmail or Outlook or a lot of those, even I'm pretty sure with Hotmail as well, you can in your calendar, you can invite someone to your meeting, and then they'll get an email, and whatever, usually it's a pretty standard file that they can open up.
Yeah, this is like, we have a standing every Tuesday at 10 o'clock.
And then does it have an end time?
It doesn't.
Okay, so send the invite that has the end time, and schedule something, if it's 10 to 10:30, schedule something at 10:40.
Yeah.
And say, hey, I gotta go.
Yeah.
You know, it's only 30 minutes. And just, I mean, it's gonna be awkward the first couple of times, especially if it's always run. But if you always have that meeting right after, then it's going to, it'll be better. You know, they'll get it. Yeah.
Instead of one-on-one, why not one-on-five? Like, have everyone share for 30 minutes.
Yeah. Well, that's this idea, the weekly tactical. Yeah. Yeah. And that's where it's different styles of meetings have different purposes and objectives. This is for you to know and for you to help champion, for you to help support your team member. Okay, so let's move on to the weekly tactical. So weekly tacticals are going to be like 45 to 90 minutes, right? That's kind of the style, the length of the meeting. And the what you're going to do in the meeting are going to be like, okay, what are the weekly activities, metrics, kind of figuring out, okay, what are some of the tactical obstacles, issues. So this is actually the agenda that I use when I meet with my teams. And I'll give you an idea. I know some people said you hate it when there's no agenda for the meeting. So you might not like this, but just before you judge and, you know, turn off your brain and just listen and hear me out as to why I think this is an effective method of doing it and why it works in a church context, okay? So the idea with this is, and here's the thing. If you do this plus the weekly one-on-one is probably enough. You don't need to do the daily stand-up. It's a little bit of overkill if you do the daily stand-up, weekly one-on-one, and weekly tactical. All right. Do either the weekly one-on-one or the weekly stand-up. Depends on the size of your team. If you're like a team of three people, you don't really need to do the weekly one-on-ones as much as those stand-up is going to be helpful, because you're going to have a lot of time just to ad hoc talk and get to know and talk about it here. But here's the idea with the weekly tactical. 45 to 90 minutes. You give each person 30 seconds to a minute to talk about what they worked on last week, what they're working on this week, and what they're working on next week. All right, it's a literal 30 seconds to a minute. Hey, this is my big project. I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to be doing this. It's not about who you're meeting with. It's like, what are kind of those big projects, those big ideas that you're working on? And you go through. Once again, just like the daily stand-up, this is more helpful for your team than it is going to be for you. Because you are already going to know this if you're doing your weekly one-on-one. But this is so everyone is in the same environment and they're going to hear this. And then what you see here is maybe once every 3 months, once every quarter, as a team, you're going to determine what are the metrics and the goals that we have as a team. Right? So together, you're going to be like, okay, well, we need to figure out what are our goals are going to be, or what our metrics are going to be, or you're going to look at ideas like, okay, we need to develop a calendar, or we need to develop kind of how are we doing with group attendance? Okay, that'd be a good one. Okay, group enrollment would be if you're in a discipleship team, if that's what you're talking about. It's like, okay, how are we doing with group enrollment, or how are we doing with evangelism training, or how are we doing whatever shared goals or shared metrics your team has? You would list that out, and at the beginning of each meeting, okay, you would what this I know you can't see this. This is behind, on target, ahead, and unknown. That's what that is. Behind, on target, ahead, and unknown. And if you can send me an email, daniel@newchurches.com, and I can email this to you. It's a Word doc. So those are the things. So what you would do as a team is you would set those goals. It would be the exact same goals every single week until they're accomplished. Right? And as a team, you'd say, okay, group enrollment. Are we behind? Are we on target? Are we ahead? Or is it unknown? And you would talk about that as a group, right? You would share because it's a shared goal. If something comes and let's say someone says behind and the whole team agrees, yeah, we are behind. And you say, okay, we're behind. So as you go through this, if you're behind, this is the agenda that you're going to talk about. Then you're going to say topic, okay? Group enrollment increase. Right, or address why we're behind on the group enrollment. So that's your first topic of your meeting, because it came up as being behind. Let's say you're ahead in one thing, or it's unknown, so you can put it here. Basically, this is going to shape the conversation that you're going to have with your team that week. Right, and at the end of doing this, you're going to have a few items that have come up that you need to address. Right, so you list them here as you're working. You, in your one-on-ones, you've probably, what I do is I have an Evernote file, and I always kind of figure out, okay, this is the date of the meeting that I'm going to be meeting in, and I know I need to talk about this, I know I need to address this, I know I need to do this, but I'm going to find a way to bring them up here. If it doesn't, I'm just going to say, oh, in addition to this, we need to talk about this, this, this. Anything else we need to talk about? And you finish that, and you say, okay, what order are we going to address it in? And then that becomes the agenda for that 45 to 90 minutes, right? Because it's weekly, right? You're addressing what needs to be done. This is what's key, okay? And this is what this is for. If you discuss and you're working on something and the conversation takes longer than 10 minutes to address and to resolve, and you know you get the feeling, oh, we're not going to resolve this in 10 minutes, there's a lot of discussion that needs to happen. Instead of you being like the general and saying, oh, okay, time's up, we need to move on to the next thing, this is the decision, let's go. You're not going to get buy-in, right? Especially there are some things like you really need to address and discuss as a team. If it goes past that 10-minute mark, you say, okay, guys, that's, you know what, we can't address this. This is so important. We can't talk about this during this meeting. This needs to be a topic for one of our monthly strategics. So you write it here. Let's say you're talking about why the group enrollment was behind. Well, actually, it's probably because there is an issue with your discipleship pathway. So you say, okay, group enrollment, discipleship pathway. So that's one of your topics for your longer meeting. Right? So you keep on going through all your agenda items, and you know, right? I mean, I like check boxes, right? So when you're done, I check off, we're done, done, done. And if it takes longer than 10 minutes, you push it over to here. And then at the end of the meeting, you say, okay, now what do we need to leave with? What are the decisions that we've made? Right? Just and this is the thing. You are probably going to know what the decisions are. And sometimes this may feel a little redundant because you're like, hey, we have the checkbox. We know what we talked about it. We know what it is. But how you interpreted it and how other people interpreted it could be completely different. Right? It's perception. So you say at the end of it, okay, just before we end our meeting, what is our decision on group enrollment? And you don't say it. You let other people say, well, it was this. It's like, are we all good with that? Is that what we all believe? Okay. And then you write it down. You write it down. You write it. It's just so you're not sharing it. Other people are sharing it. And then at the end of it, you're saying, okay, who needs to know? Cascading messages. Who do you need to tell the decision to? It may not be anyone. But they may have volunteers, especially if it comes to like evangelism or what you're going to do with Alpha or what programs you're using. It's like they need to communicate to their volunteers. So who needs to communicate whatever we've learned about and talked about in this meeting to someone else? And that's what those cascading messages are. Any questions on that? I know, like, it feels a little rigid, right? No? I mean, I think it could be interpreted as a little rigid, but it's a way just to get going, to make sure the meeting at the end. Because I guarantee you, like, at the end of this meeting, like, you've got stuff done. Like, it'll feel effective. Because the worst part of the meeting is when you are talking about something that's so important and time runs out. And you're like, we need more time to talk about this. And then, so you feel deflated because you're like, it's going to take a 30-minute ramp-up time the next meeting we have to get back to where we were, especially when people are, like, really engaging, right, when people are really bringing in. And then you look at the list of everything that else that needs to get discussed, and there's, like, five things that haven't been addressed, right? It's so frustrating. So that's why you go 10-minute mark, push it over here, and try to get through all of it, okay? That's why you need to have the third type of meeting, which is the monthly strategic, okay? So the thing about the monthly strategic is this is, and here there's two types. It's really a strategic meeting. You should have one at least on a monthly basis. But if there's a strategic topic that is time sensitive, like a decision has to be made within 2 weeks before your next monthly strategic, you can pull ad hoc strategics, right? You can say, hey guys, Our next monthly strategic is in 3 weeks. We need to have an answer in 2 weeks. So let's all check our calendars and figure out a 3-hour block to get this nailed. Right? So it's a monthly or a ad hoc strategic. Now, let's do a little bit of a brainstorm. What sorts of things could you envision being topics of a monthly strategic in your context? 3-hour meeting. So just you know, it's a 3-hour meeting. You're discussing, you're analyzing, you're brainstorming ideas, thinking about long-term issues, critical things for your team, for your ministry. You know, there's kind of like one or two big topics that you have, right? At least two in case the first one gets done really quickly. You know, people are preparing. You know, you're asking people to read something before they come. You don't do that in the weekly tacticals. You're not getting people to be like, hey, read this book or read this article. No, it's just because it's weekly. What people are working on, what making sure everyone is on target to meet their goals. The monthly strategic is, hey, read this book or read this article. Watch this video before you come. And there's this sense of there can be conflict, good conflict, because you're really wrestling through an issue. Okay, what are some topics? Yeah, I would say I wouldn't. I would ask for like 30 minutes or 40 minutes of a monthly strategic. It would be too long for a weekly tactical, but it would be too. It would drag on if it was that topic for 3 hours. So what you would say is, hey, we're doing a new website. Everyone understands it. Everyone check out the old website. Tell me what you think is missing. And bring your ideas of what should go on the new website. And then when you get there, everyone's sharing. And the beauty of it is everyone is hearing what else everyone else. And then you can see the duplicates. You can see what's are shared. But if that could probably be done in 30, 45 minutes. If you would get enough information that you would need in 30, 45 minutes if people came prepared. Yeah, and then after that, it would be, okay, next monthly strategic. Hey, this is what we've decided. You know, what do you guys think? Or maybe you send an email out. Yeah. I mean, event calendaring, I think, would be a big thing. One thing that I love to do is, you know, and this is pretty simple, right? So you got January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, right? So what I do is I'd say, okay, you look at the different ministry areas that you have, right? So you got groups, you got kids, you know, maybe women, men, students, or, you know, whatnot, right? So you're doing this whole month, you're calendaring, and you say, okay, what's a big event that you have, right? So you get everyone to kind of X in, okay, well, groups, we're going to do a launch. We're going to do an appreciation dinner, right? Kids, you're going to do training, you're going to do this, and you just kind of do all that, right? You kind of schedule that all out. And then what you'll see is, imagine if it's like this, right? And it's like, oh, you know, it's kind of like, you kind of see a pattern. You see what everyone is doing, and then you draw a graph, right? So you say, okay, well, look, these are going to be high time-consuming months, right? So you go, this is energy, right? So this is energy and time. So it's high. This drops, and then it goes like this. You know what I'm talking about? And then what you do is you're actually drawing a rhythm of what you're asking your church to be involved in, the rhythm of your church life. Because the thing is, someone may be in groups, but also may be in kids, may also be in this, may also be in this. And then you preach a sermon series on, hey, I want you to be missional. You know, you're like, but they're going to be at church 4 times a night that month. Right? So this will actually help you with your sermon planning, the idea of the rhythm of your church. So this would be a great, like, this would be a perfect topic to talk about in your monthly strategic. You know, even when it comes to, like, what are our strategic ends or our kind of our key result areas for what we need to accomplish. Those would be great ideas to address in that sort of meeting. Now, when you meet in a strategic meeting, when you have a strategic meeting, here's a framework. It's a good framework. It's not the perfect one or the only thing that you need to do, but just like I gave you this framework, right, for a weekly tactical, this is what the framework would be for a monthly strategic, right? So the first would be what we know, right? So you go around, I mean, you have like 3 hours, right? So here are our topics. Okay, we need to talk about events, right? So what do we know about events? What do we know about the upcoming events? And you draw that all out, right? What do we know? The next thing is what we need to figure out. All right, so what do we need to figure out? This is what we know. What do we now need to figure out? And then that's where you do the discussion. Well, we need to figure out a good rhythm for our church. So you work through that. And then at the end, I mean, this is where a lot of the time is going to be. Okay, as a result of all our discussion, what are our next steps? Who are our point persons? And what are our due dates? Right? It's simple. It's simple, but it's a framework. Right? The beauty of this is the exact same framework that you're going to use in your quarterly offsite. Right, it's the exact same framework, right? What do we know? What do we need to figure out? What are the next steps? And what are the who are the point persons? And what are the due dates? In a quarterly offsite review, that's the idea where it's going to be a 1 to 2 day retreat with your staff or with your team, right? So the point of that is to actually review your overall kind of strategy, landscape, what's going on, what are the long-term results. So if it's January, you know, in the January offsite, you're thinking about Easter, right? What needs to happen in these next 4 months as an entire church, as an entire ministry team, for us to get ready for Easter, right? So you're doing that. You're getting out of the office. You're focusing on work, right? It's really going to be a 1 to 2 day. You're getting work done. You have, and basically what you do is, if you split up your quarterly offsite to being like, hey, Easter is a big topic. Discipleship pathway is another topic. You know, church multiplication is another topic. What you're going to do is you're going to basically have monthly strategics at the quarterly offsite. So you're going to do this for 3 hours at a time over multiple topics that you're going to do. So it's all together, it's condensed, you're together. And then you just take advantage of meal times. You take advantage of meal times just for people to relax, for trust to be built. Right? That's one of the things. Don't try to work over lunch or dinner because it just kind of kills your brain. Right? You want people to relax. And especially, I mean, here's a here's a good idea. I don't know how much you guys think of the rhythm of how people operate, but I for the majority of people, that afternoon, 1, 2, 3 p.m. is always the low for a lot of people. So what you do during there is make sure whatever strategic you're having, have people stand up and do it. Right? Have people stand up to do it, or have people say, hey, we're going to go outside and do it, or we're going to just do it so that people aren't sitting down and in the exact same environment they were in the morning. Try to switch it up just to get their brains to re-engage. Okay. So any questions on that before we get to our next construct?
I was in a fairly large church, leading staff, understaffed but overstaffed.
Yeah.
I'm now in a more of a church planting. There are two of us.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of volunteers.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, this is making a lot of sense for my former mm-hmm. position. I'm having trouble making the jump to managing people who are working full-time jobs and, you know, just trying to figure out. Obviously, it's pick and choose.
Yeah.
I think, but just wondered if you had any
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as you look at growing your church, right, as you work, you know, the whole idea is Ephesians 4, right? So you and your other team member, you guys are equippers, right? You're not doers. So, you know, as you figure out, okay, who are the volunteer point people? Who are the leaders of leaders?
Right, and those are in place.
Yeah, yeah. So those, it would just be meeting times, right? So on a Saturday morning or in an evening, still trying to do the month, so on a monthly, for example, right, the monthly strategic, being like, okay, with all those people coming together, being like, okay, let's on a Saturday morning or on a Friday afternoon or Friday evening, you know, let's do this together. When it comes to the weekly one-on-ones with volunteers, you don't really do the weekly tacticals. That's more of a paid staff type of thing, because you're there, you're with each other, you're trying to figure out, okay, what needs to get done. Which of the volunteers do you need to connect with? But this and this, you definitely have to do. These are the kind of like the two things you really want your leaders of leaders to be a part of, right? Your volunteers, just so that they own it more, mm-hmm. right? And you're moving them up pipeline, right? Because most volunteers don't really care about this stuff, right? It's like, I'm volunteering. Like, I don't give me work to do, because I'm leading this ministry area and that's my work, right? That's, I'm volunteering this time. But most volunteers, if you put them in a strategic and ask them to be involved in shaping the next few months, if they really are a leader of leaders, they are going to want to be a part of this and that. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's like, because it's like they're really influencing, they're really giving, and you're equipping them and giving them ownership in that. But this is probably more like an email or a phone call or a text. Yeah, but thanks for that. I mean, yeah. Awesome. All right, man, we are like crazy running out of time. So let me see. Let's do a poll, okay? I have three more constructs to get through. I didn't think that'd go through fast. So let's do a vote. Okay, let's do a vote. Adult education. Adult education is one of them. Blanchard's situational leadership is another. I'm not going to go through his situational leadership, I'm just going to tell you something about it. This you can read about. So Blanchard's situational leadership, another one. And then the last one is a reflective. Actually, let's do this. I'll tell you something about this really quickly, Blanchard's situational leadership. But between a reflective change framework and adult education, what do you guys want to talk about? Okay. So adult education is, it's going to influence the way that you teach and disciple, do your classes, the way that you approach sermons, and the way that people learn. Right, that's one. And then the reflective change framework is the idea of, okay, something's broken, something's stuck. What is a framework that we can go through to be able to solve that issue? Okay, so who wants to do the adult education one? Okay, one person. Who wants to do the reflective change? All right, there we go. Okay. The adult, yeah, I mean, I'm writing a whole chapter on it in my next book. But I mean, I can send you, if you email me, I can send you some stuff right now. Yeah, it'll be on the last slide. Yeah, yeah. But that's, my next book is going to come out in September of next year. It's called No Silver Bullets, 5 Small Shifts to Transform Your Ministry. So one of the shifts is adult education. It's the idea, how do you move from being a sage on the stage to be a guide on the side? It's going to be there. But if you email me, I can send you some notes. All right, so before we get into the reflective change, this here, Blanchard's Situational Leadership. If you don't know this, just read Leadership in the 1 Minute Manager by Ken Blanchard. It's probably one of the best books on practical leadership advice on management. Like, it's so good. It's so good. And what he says here is there's actually this process of, man, the resolution sucks here, but it's like this idea of when you have a team member, you are going to move them, you're going to direct them, to coach them, to support them, to delegate them. Right, it's all explained in the book. The one thing I wanted to say is on the topic of micromanagement. Okay, most people, if you ask them, "Are you a micromanager?" or "What? How do you manage?" most people will say, "Oh, of course I don't micromanage. I hate micromanaging." Okay, and we have this hatred, this feeling of hatred towards micromanaging. Well, the thing is, micromanaging is actually not bad. It depends on where you and your team member are at. If you're not micromanaging someone here, you're not leading. You know what I'm talking about? Like, so what this is someone new in the role, new in the responsibility. They're not really sure what they need to do. You need to micromanage them. You need to tell them, this is what you do and this is how you do it. And the reason you do that is because if someone is at this level and you say, "Oh, I'm not a micromanager, just go do this. You know, go develop a discipleship pathway or go develop an evangelism tool," and they're here, they will not know what to do. Yeah. So you need to say, "You're here. This is what you need to do. By next week, go do it." Like, really spelt out. It'll feel childish, but you need to do that. And then if they do it, and you're like, "Oh, that's awesome." So you do it again. And let's say they came up with ideas. You're like, "Well, what do you think?" And they start owning it a little bit more, then you move them to here. You begin coaching them. You begin supporting them a bit more. And then you move them to here, and then you move them to here. And this is the place where you are not a micromanager. This is the place where you're actually saying, "Hey, you own the discipleship pathway. Whatever it looks like, however it forms, you're the one in charge. You tell me what you think. You tell me what you come up with." Right? We want to get there with our volunteers and our leaders, but it always starts here. Right, especially if you're hiring someone from the outside. Right, the tendency is if someone's a superstar at a previous church or someone else, and they're an expert, the assumption is you need to put them here, but they're going to bring in what worked for them in the previous context and try to implement it in your context, and it doesn't always work. Right, so you need to be clear and say, "Hey, this is what we call the situational leadership framework. I know you were here in your previous church. Like, this is a new culture and context, so I'm going to put you here. It's going to feel childish. It's going to feel like it's too controlling. But my hope and my goal in the next few months is to move you here. But I need to trust you. I need to trust you. Right? I need to trust that you understand our culture. Right? And as I trust you and as you do good work, we'll move you here. But I want to move you here as fast as I can." If you share that with someone who is high capacity, then they'll get it. They'll go, "Oh, yeah, I get it. There's a goal. I understand it." But if you don't share that and you just do this secretly, they're going to be like, "Why did I move here? Like, this sucks. Like, I know more than you do. Question? Here to here. Yeah. Yeah, we want to move here as fast as we can because we have so many things to do, right? Yeah. All right, so the reflective change framework. And once again, I'll email this to you. That's my email. I'll pull it up again. I'll email this to you. It's easy. But the beauty of this reflective change framework, the reason you would use it is when you make a mistake and you need to figure out why it went wrong or where you went wrong. Okay? You can use this even if you want to be proactive, you can even use this at the end of every week. It'll help you figure out where else something like this is happening. Or if, so for example, let's say you're at a meeting, someone asks you to do something, or you say you're going to do something, and you always seem to forget. You might have written it down, right? You're proactive in that way, but a week goes by and the person asks you about it, and you're like, oh, I forgot. Right? Or you say you're going to be somewhere by some time, and, you know, 3 times out of 4, you're always late. You're only late by 5 minutes, but you're late. You know, if there's something that you want to change in your life, right? It's funny, people looking at each other. If there's something that you want to change about your life or something that is just like, why am I doing this the way I'm doing it? This is a really practical framework that will help you figure out why it's happening in your life. This is not a, hey, you know, you want to change? Then do this. It's not like a prescriptive, this is going to work for everyone. These are questions that you're going to ask to yourself, and it'll help you. This is actually a great tool if you're managing someone, and they're in that spot, and you can sit down, and for the 30 minutes or for an hour, be like, hey, I'm going to ask you a few questions, and we're going to work through this together. Right? It's a great coaching guide for reflective change as well. So the first one here is, what is going wrong, or where have I been less than successful? Right? That's identifying the problem. What's going wrong, or where have I been less than successful? Well, I tell people I'm going to do something, and I don't do it, right? For example. Number two, why is this important? Well, if I tell people I'm going to do something and I don't do it, they're going to lose trust in me, okay? Well, how did this happen? What are the most important elements, right? So, okay, how did it happen? Well, I told people that I was going to be there and I wasn't there, or I was going to do something and I didn't do it. It's because I got busy with this, or maybe I misplaced my to-do list or this, and you're working through it, you know? And then next, number four, what part of the blame is mine? Well, I misplaced my to-do list, or I didn't prioritize. I didn't schedule in that a time I had to do something. I should have opened up my calendar and blocked out 2 hours to get that done, right? What specific actions can I take to prevent this from recurring, right? That's an idea, right? Open up your calendar, take a 2-hour chunk of blocks, and you know, a block, and say, okay, get your to-do list done, and that can be the appointment, right? Where else does this happen in my life? Do I do this with my kids? Do I do this with family members, with friends? What would I need to value differently to be able to change this? Well, you're beginning to see how it affects other people, right? It's like, well, if I tell people I'm going to do something and I don't get it done, I need to value other people trusting me. I need to value other people relying on me. You know, and you begin working through that. And then how can I bring this value into my activity on a daily basis? Well, maybe, 15, 20 minutes every day, you do a recurring meeting in your schedule, right? And it says, look at your to-do list, right? It's not a 5-hour thing. It's like 15 minutes every day. You get an appointment. Say, look at your to-do list, right? That could be an idea. And then what would be the result of this change in my life and ministry? Well, I'd be more productive. People would trust me. So do you kind of get how that framework works? Yeah, it's simple. It's not like mind-blowing. But it is a tool. It's a construct that'll help you get stuff done. So that's my email. That's my email. That's my Twitter, my website, the ministry that I lead, newchurches.com. Thanks for being here. I want to give a copy away of my book. This is a book that I wrote with Ed. Let me ask, I'm always trying to think, like, who did I give it to? What are you going to implement? And as a result of this session, and whoever puts their hand up, as a result of this session, what are you going to do this week differently? Okay, you're the first one. What are you going to do? Oh, no, it was
me?
Yeah, it was you.
I am a worship leader.
Okay, the situational leadership.
Yep.
All right, man, here you go.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, everyone, for coming. That's my information.
Thank you.
I'd love to stay in touch.